Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
In March of 2022, I took over as the host of The Dive. And in the time since, I've had some of the most fascinating conversations with some of the most influential journalists to ever play the game. But all things must come to an end, or at least go on an extended hiatus so the host can publicize her groundbreaking debut memoir. Same diff. It's been a gas to serve as your trustworthy podcast host, and I look forward to coming back to the booth, but for now, I'm taking my all-in-one podcast producer hat off and going back into superstar divatastic writer mode. Oh my god, don't start crying, you're gonna make me cry. Look, you can still catch me doing all manner of live events all around town once Altogether Different, my hotly anticipated book, arrives in stores on October 17th. And you can pre-order that now at corsabooks.com. And I'll still be your Potlander. And here's some delicious news, I'll also be helming a new column as well, spotlighting the small businesses that keep Portland weird, wild, whimsical, and wonderful. On this very special episode of The Dive, I'm talking to Willamette Week editor Mark Zussman, a Portland legacy that I'm very proud to call a contemporary. Let's catch up with him now.
And the only reason why we're around, because our business is about 60% the size it was prior to COVID, is for two reasons. One, we were a beneficiary of the federal paying PPP loans, mm-hmm. Which we took full advantage of, and that, frankly, I think saved our bacon. But the more important development, the more sustaining development, is that, as you know, Brianna, we are a free publication, both in print. We have no paywall online. And so we don't get any money from readers directly, but when COVID hit, we started asking. Mm-hmm. And we are now receiving 20% of our revenue from our readers voluntarily. And that's really the only reason why we're still going right now, and why we in fact have a newsroom that's larger than we had prior to COVID, because we've been able to reduce a bunch of other costs and pour money into our newsroom, which is really what we're all about. Printing fewer copies than we did prior to COVID. Newsprint is very expensive. We still move all the papers we print. We still find that there is a reader demand for the print product, but clearly the advertising demand for print product has diminished.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell if you look at the size of our papers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, to that end, where are we now? Can we keep depending on those physical copies?
We're planning on continuing to print, albeit in a diminished fashion. We're not going to print the number of copies. We were printing more than 50,000 copies prior to COVID. We still think there is both real value to our readers. We frankly think it's an important, we were, during COVID, a lot of papers stopped printing, and then they started printing up after COVID. We thought it was really important for the city to have people see papers in boxes. We view this as a mission-driven organization. We're a community asset in a variety of ways, and we thought it was really important to keep that presence. And we continue to do so. I will say that keeping boxes clean and tidy continues to be a big challenge in this city, and it's a big expense. But we're still at it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes I see blue boxes and I think, that's almost a work of art, how intensely it's been graffitied and knocked up. And
I don't quite view it the same way.
They're like the sunlight is hitting it just right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. So how do you see Willamette Week evolving in this new landscape and to a more diversified Portland, to a more diversified readership?
First of all, you know, the good news for us is that since COVID, our audience has grown significantly. And, you know, it may be because of what's happening in the rest of the media landscape, but increasingly we're viewed as a very significant news source, not just in the city, but in the state. And so what's been gratifying is not only have the numbers of our readers gone way up, but frankly, our impact mm-hmm. has increased. And, you know, just take a look at the last 24 months, what this small newspaper has been able to do. And understand, you know, and I think, Brianna, you know this because you're now part of our team and you've gotten to know our staff. This is not a group of ideologically driven people, but this is a group of people who strongly believe in the notion that the only reason to do journalism is because that if we do our jobs right, we can make a difference.
Yeah.
And that we have done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, take a look at the laws that have been changed, the policies. You know, at the very beginning of COVID, we had a small story about how OHSU was using prison labor to watch sheets from its COVID wards. A month later, OHSU ended the practice. I mean, that's just a small thing. We were the newspaper that frankly broke the story about Nick Kristof's ineligibility mm-hmm. To run for governor. We were, Nigel Jaquis broke the news, did the research and reporting to show that more than 500 state employees were working out of state and were able to travel in state and get the state to pay those travel costs when they had to come to meetings. 6 months later, the governor changed that policy. Mm-hmm. The most significant impact, however, of the past year has been what our youngest reporter did, Sophie Peel, in the 2 years of reporting she's had on the cannabis industry, an industry you know very well, and her beat reporting, her dedication to developing sources, is what led to the revelation that Secretary of State Fagan was getting a consulting contract from a very dubious and huge cannabis operation that owes millions of dollars in unpaid taxes, has been sued by more than 24 entities, has sort of suspicious origins. The result of Sophie's reporting has been, you talk about impact, this woman resigned, a federal investigation, corruption investigation has been begun into her and the Secretary of State's office. The state legislature changed the law in the following session based on Sophie's reporting, because up until that point in Oregon, unlike in most states in this country, I can run for office and give you and take from you $20,000 in small bills as a campaign contribution. Because that's how LaModa, the cannabis company that Sophie was writing about, was making its enormous campaign contributions mm-hmm. to the governor and Fagan. The legislature changed that law as a result of Sophie's reporting, and then the OLC also changed its ruling to be in concert with Washington, which has much better laws, that says that if you owe taxes, you don't get to have a dispensary license.
Easy.
In addition, Sophie's reporting revealed that head of Bureau of Labor and Industries, Val Hoyle, who has since run and been elected to Congress, gave a $500,000 grant to LaModa, this cannabis company, to a nonprofit that didn't exist that was created by the head of LaModa. I'm going on and on because what I'm saying is one reporter had this ripple effect and has turned the apple cart upside down in terms of thinking about the influence of special interests on politics in the state of Oregon, and it's not just writing about it, it's having an impact.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question of several minutes ago, we're going to build on that. And, you know, what we're finding is that this kind of watchdog journalism is generating a lot more in the way of reader support. And so we're going to continue to look to readers to support our journalism out of the belief that most people share with us the sense that few things stand in the way of tyranny more than local, truly independent journalism, and that's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so our entire focus is how do we create more resources and more opportunities for more reporters? We've got a demonstrated ability to train young journalists. And we want to continue to do that. And certainly there's lots of opportunity, not just in the city, but in the state. You know, there are three counties right now that have no newspapers covering those counties in Oregon.
What counties?
They're in eastern Oregon. You're in some of your less populated counties. But, you know, you talk about the news deserts in Oregon, both within Portland and across the state. And we think that what we do, we need more of, not less of. So that's going to be our focus. And we're very, frankly, just delighted at the fact that 3 years ago we were getting no revenue from readers, and now they're on their way to supporting our enterprise, 20% and growing.
Yeah. That's wild. We just talked about more recent stories, I mean, relatively recent. Mm-hmm. But I was wondering, of all of the stories that Willamette Week has broken, which do you think have been the most impactful?
Well, there's so many stories that have had impact, both immediate and long-lasting, in terms of helping create the marketplace of ideas that a town like Portland so desperately needs. You know, obviously what people will point to is the fact that, you know, we're the only weekly newspaper in American history to ever win the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting, for the reporting that Nigel did now 10 years ago that led to the, Neil Goldschmidt was the former governor of Oregon, and it was a story about his sexual assault of a minor, mm-hmm. and the result of that was he had to resign from all his positions, his portrait was removed from the state capitol and from city hall, he was past the statute of limitations, so it couldn't be prosecuted, but it also at the time sort of upended the entire Democratic establishment, mm-hmm. because this guy was the most, far and away, the most powerful person in the state and in Democratic politics. But there are other stories that we've done that have had different kinds of impact in more subtle ways. I mean, you know, one of my favorite stories that Nigel ever did actually was a story about Whitaker Middle School, which very few people remember, but he did a story basically saying that the story was poisoning its students and its teachers for more than a decade, mm-hmm. and he marshaled all the reports to show it. Mm-hmm. The day after the story was published, the story comes out on Wednesday. On Thursday, the school shut down. It has never been reopened, and a year later, it was bulldozed over. It's now a park. Mm-hmm. Talk about impact. Beth Slovig did some reporting on Gordon Smith, who was a Republican senator representing Oregon in the United States Senate. His positions about immigration and illegal immigration were what you would assume from a conservative Republican senator. Beth, who speaks Spanish, went out to his frozen pea processor in eastern Oregon and lo and behold found a number of undocumented workers. Mm-hmm. According to pollsters, that changed the course of the election and he ended up losing.
Yeah.
We did a story once about student athletes at in Portland Public School District who were allowed to play varsity sports even though they were flunking out of school. School district changed its policy, so you had to have, I think, at least a 2.5 GPA mm-hmm. to compete. But it's the small stuff in between. You know, there was a mayor in the city of Portland who used to say to his staff, at least he confided this to me years after, that he used to say to his staff when thinking about a decision, what's Willamette Week going to think? As a way of sort of forming either policy or maybe the spin on policy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that suggests that we've probably had a lot of impact that we may not even be aware of. Yeah. Then again, I may be just drinking my own bad water. It's always a possibility.
Of all of the luminaries that have come through these halls to have written for WW, is there any alumnus that you would love to see, dead or alive, come back for another column?
Well, we've had so many fantastic, wonderful wordsmiths that I've had the pleasure to either work with or work alongside. Catherine Dunn, I was just very close to and was just, she was one of a kind, and I will tear up if I talk about her too much. I had the delight of working with Susan Orlean. Saying I edited her is kind of a crime because she needed no editing. Amy Godin, Peter Sistrom, Phil Kiesling, Mark Christensen, Larry Colton, Linda Keen. I'm going to just name names that don't mean anything to you, but we have had a wonderful group of people, many who have gone on to the New Yorker or write books, or the New York Times, or the Washington Post, or the Wall Street Journal. Sometimes they come back. I'd have a hard... it would have to be Kay Dunn. You asked me to pick one. If I could bring her back to have her write The Slice for me.
I had a feeling it was going to be Katherine Dunn. Yeah. She's one of my favorite authors also. Yeah. Anna Zussman is succeeding you as mm-hmm. publisher. Mm-hmm. What's next for Mark?
My entire focus, again, is back on the newspaper. I tend to focus more on the news section than the arts and culture section. Arts and culture is very important, but it's just not my area of expertise, and we hope to be building that up over the next year. We have real plans. But it's a combination of that and trying to help persuade readers that they ought to be supporting our efforts.
Yeah.
And that those two things are going to be, hopefully, fill my days.
And for our readers, the people that are so deeply invested in the Willamette Week, like myself, it's our paper and we love it. What can we be doing to support?
Well, there's a group called Friends of Willamette Week, FOWW, and I think at the bottom of every story there's an opportunity for you to join and find ways to support us from as little as a dollar to giving us your winning lottery ticket.
Did you hear that, listeners? If you win the lottery, send it to the Willamette Week.
My guest, Mark Zussman, and thank you for being an amazing audience. I'll see you on the flip. Bye. Thank you.